And welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Lots to get to today. First of all, before we get going, we can give you our social media accounts. Love hearing from you guys on our Twitter page, on our Instagram page. Very simply, at Doug Russell Pod. You can always email the show, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. For all of that in one very easy, convenient place, including our Facebook page, including our YouTube page as well, and all of our past show downloads, you can very simply go to DougRussellPod.com. Again, www.DougRussellPod.com. Has this not been the craziest NCAA tournament so far that we've ever seen? Has this not been the either craziest or best NCAA tournament that you can ever remember? You've got Oral Roberts, a number 15 seed in the Sweet 16. You've got Oregon State, a number 12 seed. Number 11 seed Syracuse, they're in the Sweet 16 as well. Number one seed like Illinois and Iowa, my pick to win it all. Now, I knew I wasn't going to win the NCAA bracket. I understood that. And Iowa was number two seed, or was a number two seed. They got blown out by Oregon 95-80. I had Iowa winning the whole thing. This whole tournament has been absolutely nuts. And that's what I root for. I don't root for my own bracket. If I do get my own bracket to do well, fine, whatever. That's great. But I root for my teams, and I root for chaos. And right now, we've got chaos reigning supreme in the NCAA tournament. The statistics do, by the way, back this up. The first weekend of this tournament has already had the most upsets prior to the Sweet 16 in tournament history. Now, according to tournament media director David Warlock, he said last night, as I record this, it's Monday, so last night, Sunday night, that 11 upsets have already broken the record for most upsets prior to the Sweet 16, and that's before all of the upsets that we, and there are games that are going on right now as I'm recording this as well, but there was a big upset, obviously, earlier on Monday, the one that I just mentioned when Oregon defeated Iowa, blew them out 95-80. But the NCAA defines upsets as games won by teams seeded five spots or more lower than the favorite. So that does qualify the one that we were just talking about. Number seven seeded Oregon beating number two seeded Iowa. So add that one to the list, obviously. But that's how they define upsets. Games won by teams seeded five spots or more lower than the favorite. So when Rutgers beats number seven Clemson, number 10 Rutgers beats number seven Clemson, that's not necessarily an upset. But when 11-seeded Syracuse beats 6-seeded San Diego State, that is an upset, for example. That's how they characterize that. That's not my metric. That's their metric. So there were six of the eight games on Monday between teams seeded five spots or more apart. Now, again, by the time you listen to this, you will know how all of these games go on. The games that have been final that we do know about as I'm recording this right now, top seeded Gonzaga, they've gotten through to the Sweet 16. They handled Oklahoma 87-71. Also, it was UCLA defeating Abilene Christian. So a number 11 seed getting through with the UCLA Bruins. But again, it wasn't an upset. They were favored to beat Abilene Christian, and they did 67-47 in that one. And then there's some other games that are going on later on again tonight as I record this, which is the challenge. I love doing a podcast, but during the NCAA tournament, it is a challenge because there are so many games that are going on. But this tournament, again, has been just nuts. So how crazy has this tournament been? Well, as of Sunday night, Monday morning, the eight teams that have gone through in the round of 16 have come from eight different conferences. The record for the most leagues represented, now they're not going to get there this year, but the record for the most leagues represented in the Sweet 16 is 11. It was first set in 1991. It was tied in 2012. Now, we already know that Abilene Christian will not represent the Southland coming into the Sweet 16. Gonzaga obviously did, so the Western Collegiate Conference, the WCC, they're in as well. It's not going to get to 11, but it is going to get to at least 9 as we record this. This year's tournament also has four seeds of number 13 or higher advancing. That breaks the record for the most ever in the Sweet 16. It was one off the record for most double-digit seeds in the round of 32, as the 9 double-digit upsets in this year's tournament trailed the 10 in the 2016 tournament. That was, remember, number 15 seeded Middle Tennessee over second seeded Michigan State. That was one of them. Of the 11 upsets so far this year, the most notable, actually of the 12 upsets now this year, the most notable being Oral Roberts beating Ohio State, also Abilene Christian beating Texas, 13th seeded Ohio beating 4th seeded Virginia, and 13th seeded North Texas beating 4th seeded Purdue. In the second round, Loyola Chicago obviously beat top seeded Illinois. We'll talk about Porter Moser in just a second. Hang with me. Also, number 12 seeded Oregon State. They beat number 4 seeded Oklahoma State, and 11th seeded Syracuse beat 3rd seeded West Virginia. That's the insanity of this year's tournament. It is upset central, and I am here for it. And that's one of the great things about March Madness. That name, March Madness, didn't come out of nowhere. And I know every single year when we pick our brackets, nobody in the world would have had Oral Roberts beating Ohio State. Nobody in the world would have had Abilene Christian beating Texas. If you really wanted to go out on a limb, I'm sure probably somebody picked Ohio over Virginia or North Texas beating Purdue. I'm sure somebody had Loyola of Chicago beating top-seeded Illinois. But it doesn't happen very often, and that's what makes this tournament the greatest sports spectacle, especially the first 4 days of the tournament. It makes it the greatest sports spectacle on the calendar every single year. I'll take it over the Super Bowl, which I love. I'll take it over opening day, which I love. I'll take it over the month of October when you've got the baseball playoffs going on, as well as the NBA starting, as well as the NBA. And I love all of that. These 4 days, now I know they shifted it a day, but these 4 days, the best 4 days on the calendar every single year. But for whatever reason, maybe it's COVID, maybe it's not, I don't know. But for whatever reason, this year you've got all of these insane updates, and I am here for it. But of course, our lead story, as it has been since it broke on Friday afternoon, not necessarily expecting it, at least I wasn't expecting it, but the dismissal of Marquette head basketball coach Steve Wojciechowski, joining me here on the Doug Russell Podcast. By the way, our first three-time guest here on the Doug Russell Podcast, he's become a regular. He's Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Bet you didn't know you're our first three-timer.
No, man. Hang the banner. Let's hang that up and the home office here.
Absolutely. Were you as caught off guard as I was by the release from Bill Scholl, the athletic director, on Friday afternoon at about 1 o'clock?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. After Marquette lost in the Big East tournament, had a bad performance in that game against Georgetown, scoring only 14 points in the first half. Even after that, I thought that they would give him another year just because of the stuff we talked about in the past appearances on the show, just the financial issues of the school and the weird year with the COVID protocols and restrictions and everything. I still thought they would give him another year. But then early last week, Monday, you know, they lost associate head coach Dwayne Killings, became the head coach at Albany. That just, it started feeling like maybe this was a time when they would start looking at what the future would be, if this is a time to kind of change course, because Coach Killings was a big part of that staff. Players loved him. He's a good recruiter, a big part of that program. And then, you know, you could just feel like the tide turning with the fans. You know, fans had been upset most of the year, but he felt like it had turned the corner where they couldn't get back the fans on their side with Wojo as the head coach. And I'm sure I had many Marquette fans email me that they were voicing their concerns with the administration, and some of them were pretty influential Marquette fans. So I could feel the tide turning. So by Friday when they announced it, I could see where it was headed.
How much was the buyout? How much is this cost, as Bill Scholl said? How much of this is going to have to be absorbed by the athletics department?
Yeah, I don't I can't really say for sure the exact number, but he was signed for 3 more years, you know, through the 2023-24 season, and he was making right around $2 million a year. So you can figure it was probably right around there. I mean, I really don't want to speculate, but it wasn't cheap, I could say that.
When you spoke with Bill Scholl on Friday in the wake of this, what was his demeanor and how much was he personally wrestling with this? Just from the standpoint that I know that he does have personal affection for Steve Wojciechowski as a person.
Yeah, he said it was a really tough decision, and he just said Steve Wojciechowski, he did a lot of what they demanded of the men's basketball coach. You know, he ran a clean program. There wasn't any whiff of any kind of NCAA scandals during his 7 seasons here. You know, he recruited top-notch kids. Anyone who's dealt with the players at Marquette, like I have, I know you have too, just really good, hard-working, humble, recruited really good players, and the team did lots of things in the community. But just the results were underwhelming, man. They caught up with Wojo after 7 years, and I know it affected Bill Scholl a lot. He has high respect for Coach Wojciechowski as a person.
Where does Steve Wojciechowski go from here? I mean, coaches get fired all the time. It happens every year, and it's one of those professions that, you know, you're hired to get fired, I suppose. But does he, in your opinion, have to go back to a place maybe like, I don't know, Duke, where he came from, and, you know, rehabilitate his coaching image, so to speak? I'm using air quotes. I know you can't see me, but I'm using air quotes. His coaching image a little bit before he gets his next head coaching job, in your opinion?
It's hard to say. I definitely think that's a possibility of going back to Duke. I know Coach K obviously loves him a lot. I could see him taking maybe a mid-major job somewhere, just stay in the head coaching ranks and maybe go that route instead of, you know, taking these big jobs, you know, having to rebuild something with a lot of job pressure, maybe a job that not so demanding as the Marquette job was. I could see him going that route as well.
All right, so let's turn the page. What's next? I know that you have a subscribers-only article up at JS Online right now, 5 potential candidates to become Marquette's next men's basketball coach. There's a picture of Porter Moser. I know he's the hot name right now. He's from Naperville, Illinois. He has had a relationship with the late Rick Majerus, as you write in your column. There's a lot of things that start to add up that might make Marquette attractive for him specifically. There are a lot of things that I think might add up.
Yeah, for sure. And he's at Loyola. He's a Chicago area native. I know he has great respect for the Marquette program. But like you said, he's the hot name right now. Any coaching search going on, and there's a lot of them, is going to have Porter Moser at the top of that list for good reason, like you mentioned. But, you know, it's in close proximity. Maybe Marquette might have to compete with DePaul. DePaul's got an opening job, too, and he doesn't have to leave Chicago for that one. And, you know, with every win that he has in the NCAA tournament, then that price just keeps getting higher for him. So that could be an issue, too.
As far as Marquette's finances, what do you know of how deep they can go as far as hiring a coach? Because DePaul, I mean, I understand how DePaul is attractive from the standpoint that you don't have to move. You can stay in the same city. But DePaul, for whatever reason, they've been behind the eight ball in the Big East for so long, and I don't know why they've even got a newer arena in Wintrust Arena. They're in a great conference. There's a lot of things that add up that make DePaul attractive to any coach, but if you put DePaul up against Marquette, at least as far as recent success, I've got to think Marquette is head and shoulders above just about any other school in the area that has an opening or in the Midwest that has an opening.
Yeah, for sure, and as far as the finances are concerned, I thought that was going to be an issue with Coach Wojciechowski's buyout. But if they're passionate about the person and passionate about what they're doing, like, college programs usually can find the money somehow, you know, whether that's going to, a wealthy donor. Those aren't social circles that I run in, but, I mean, they're out there somewhere. And, you know, if they want the money, I think they can find the money for if it's a guy that they really want.
Some of the other names that you mentioned on the list, because, again, I think we're going to be hearing a lot about Porter Moser, no matter how long this run of the Loyola Ramblers goes in the NCAA tournament. It's a fun story, by the way, and I love the fact that they took down Illinois, and there's just been absolute chaos in this year's tournament. It's been a lot of fun to watch. My bracket is, as predicted, busted by Saturday night. But you talk about a couple of other guys, including Dennis Gates. We'll get to John Beilein in a second, Craig Smith, Pat Kelsey. I want to kind of touch on these guys for just a minute, one by one. You call the up-and-comer category, that's led by Dennis Gates. Tell us about Dennis Gates.
Yeah, he's been the head coach at Cleveland State for a couple of years. 2 years now. Actually, I had Marquette experience. He was a graduate assistant under Tom Crean early in the 2000s, the 2003-2004 season. Spent a lot of time with Leonard Hamilton, a really great college coach at Florida State, and recruited a lot of NBA players there. Dennis Gates is considered an up-and-comer, really a hot name in the college coaching industry. He's 41 years old, so he's still kind of youngish. Concerns there, obviously, he doesn't have a lot of experience as a head coach, but, you know, there's risk with every candidate you're going to be looking at. It's also, Bill Shaw, one thing that he mentioned last week was diversity is really going to be a factor in who they're looking at, and you know, Marquette's never had an African-American head coach, Dennis Gates. He could be the first one, and we'll find out in the next couple weeks here, but I think they'll definitely take a look at him for sure.
All right, then there's the flip side. Then there's John Beilein. Yeah, he had a lot of success when he was at the University of Michigan, a terrible run as an NBA coach with the Cleveland Cavaliers, but he's 68 years old. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't see this one at all.
Yeah, you might have to give him a call at least, just because if he comes in, you know you're going to get a well-coached team. There's going to be excitement about going out to see his teams play. But yeah, you're right. This isn't a guy that's going to be there for, you know, the next decade. He's an all-time great college coach, won at every level, junior college, Division II, small schools, been a winner at every stop in college. But yeah, you're right. There's a concern there. With all these guys, there's a lot of upside, and there's also, you know, risk with any candidate.
The one guy that I've heard a lot before Loyola did what they did this past weekend in the NCAA tournament was Craig Smith at Utah State. Tell us about Craig Smith. He's had a lot of success out there. Why is he a good fit for Marquette, in your opinion?
He's a Minnesota native. He could be a guy that wants to come back, be in the Midwest. All his stops, his teams have exceeded expectations as far as if you can look at any metric, just like preseason, coaches, predictions for the conference, whatever conference he was in. He was at South Dakota, and he's been at Utah State too. Always exceeded expectations as far as preseason KenPom rankings. His teams usually end up well above where they're expected to be. Players seem to develop there. Players just get better over there when they're in a system. So I know he's not the sexiest name around, but he could be a guy that once he gets a high major opportunity and a good job like Marquette, he could make some noise with the right resources and get some, you know, better talented players under him.
And then the final guy that you write about, Ben, is Pat Kelsey at Winthrop. As you write, could be ready for the next step after several successful seasons at Winthrop. What does he possibly bring to the table as one of those guys who's kind of flying under the radar, I think, as far as some of the names that are being thrown around?
Yeah, he's a Winthrop's been, you know, you just go through their record. They're really good every year. They compete. They have a lot of high-energy players. If you watch Pat Kelsey on the sideline, he looks like the strength and conditioning coach. You know, he's got the tight shirt, and he's jacked up, and he paces the sideline. You know, he could be a guy that, you know, Marquette's a team that kind of needs a jolt of energy, I think, you know, after the last couple years of apathy among Marquette fans. You know, this could be a guy that really jolts the energy. He's really passionate. You see it in press conferences. He talks a lot about social issues, and he's really passionate when he talks. So he could be a guy that gives you that extra jolt of energy.
Final thing for you, as we're joined by Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, in terms of how the rest of the country views Marquette. I look at Marquette. I'll preface this by saying, I think you and I probably talked about this before. You look at Marquette's pluses and you can just kind of rattle them off. They're a basketball first school and a basketball first conference. They've got history. They invest in the program. They've got arguably the best college basketball arena in the world to play in. They've got a great on-campus facility in the Al McGuire Center. It's a great academic university. I mean, it's one after another, after another, after another, after another. The flip side of that, though, is that they just haven't had the success that they had years and years ago. And I don't know how much that's diminished the program in the eyes of the college basketball community as a whole around the country. How, in your opinion, is Marquette viewed as a destination for a possible coach, not a stepping stone? I know Tom Crean liked to use it as a stepping stone. And I think Buzz kind of, that was a lateral move. He got out while the getting was good, I think, because of some other stuff that was going on. But as far as a destination for a coach, how is Marquette viewed, in your opinion?
No, I think it's viewed very high. I don't know where exactly on the rankings you would put it. I would say top 20 job for sure. I'd have to have more time to think about it. Maybe even you could push like a top 15 job just for all the reasons that you mentioned. Playing at Fiserv Forum. They spend a lot of money on basketball. $15 million is a number that was last reported, though I don't know what they classify exact as basketball-related spending. But regardless, they spend a lot of money on basketball. If you're a coach and you're looking at this job, you see that they can get talent here, and they haven't had, you know, we've talked about before, they haven't won an NCAA tournament game since 2013. So if you're a guy that can come in here and immediately turn the program around and have success in the NCAA tournament, man, you're a Marquette legend, you know, just for doing that, just for bringing the program back to past levels of excitement. So I think judging by the people I see interested in talking about the job, I think it's definitely viewed as an attractive place to be.
Any gut feeling either way as far as what Marquette's next move is? Do they wait it out while Loyola plays out their run in the NCAA tournament, or are they full speed ahead?
It's hard to say, but I think they do have to wait around for Porter Moser. But they could, like, you know, they could really, if they talk to one of these guys, Dennis Gates is a guy that I'm keeping an eye on. If they talk with him and have a formal interview with him, which I don't know if they've had or not, but if it happens and they're blown away by him, maybe we see something. But we'll see. It'll be an interesting couple of weeks, that's for sure.
Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's got his ear to the ground over on the Marquette campus as to who is going to be the next Marquette head men's basketball coach. Ben, I appreciate the time again. Check out his articles at the Journal Sentinel or at JS Online for the very latest on that. And I appreciate you being the first three-time guest that we've ever had here on the Doug Russell Podcast.
We'll have the ceremony soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks, pal.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, there he goes. Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, our first three-timer here on the Doug Russell Podcast. And yes, there will be a fourth, I'm sure, after Porter Moser. Who knows? But Marquette is going to have a new basketball coach, and whomever it is, we'll talk about it with Ben Steele coming up here on the show. Now, my friend Jeff Sherman, one of the co-founders of OnMilwaukee.com, he's as much of a cheerleader for Wisconsin and Milwaukee and the sports teams and the communities. He's as much of a cheerleader as anybody I know. And he's a Marquette guy. And he tweeted out the other day that he is someone who, hey, look, Marquette fans root for Wisconsin and Wisconsin fans root for Marquette, especially if, you know, you're from the state of Wisconsin. That is not true by and large. It's true if you didn't go to either school, but I can count, and he's one of them, and Jeff Polinsky, who tweeted at me, he's another one. So there's two of the five, I think, that went to Marquette that can root for the Wisconsin Badgers. But Jeff tweeted out that Marquette fans can root for Wisconsin. That's not true, by and large. Everyone that I know that went to Marquette University hates with a passion anything that's even red. I worked for the Marquette flagship, 94.5 ESPN, and they bring in a lot of Marquette kids that work at the station. That's just the way the Good Karma brands, they have an affinity for Marquette. And Marquette's a great school. And I grew up rooting for Marquette, but I also grew up rooting for the Wisconsin Badgers, and I didn't go to either school. I went to Oshkosh. So I grew up rooting for Marquette, and that's when Doc Rivers was at Marquette. That's when Hank Raymonds was the coach at Marquette, and then he retired, and then it was Rick Majerus. And, you know, guys like Dean Marquardt and Kerry Trotter, Jim McElvain in later years, Tony Smith, my friend, who is now doing one of the afternoon shows over at 94.5 ESPN, one of my former teammates over there. I mean, that's my era of rooting for Marquette basketball. So I go back a long way with Marquette basketball. As far as the Wisconsin Badgers, I grew up watching bad Badgers basketball and bad Badgers football, but they were still my team. So I can root for both Marquette and Wisconsin. Now, if you put a gun to my head, I will say that when the two do meet on the court at the same time, you cut me open and I'm going to bleed Wisconsin red. But I do root for Marquette 364 days of the year. But again, I didn't go to either school. But if you went to Marquette, you hate Wisconsin. So I know that there are going to be some Marquette fans who are going to drop off right now, and I get it. And I, you know, salute you and thanks for listening up until this point. But we do have to talk about the Wisconsin Badgers. And they had a good run, look, just getting to the second round of the NCAA tournament. And they faltered down the stretch terribly. And I think that next year is going to be a tough transition for the Badgers just because they've got so many seniors that aren't going to come back. I mean, the NCAA has given them the option. I don't think many of them are going to take it to come back for a super senior year at Madison. Demetri Trice is 25 years old, for crying out loud. I mean, this starting five for Wisconsin, as was famously pointed out on several occasions, older than the starting five of the Chicago Bulls in the NBA. So I think that you're going to see guys that didn't necessarily get a whole lot of playing time this year get a lot of playing time very, very soon. But that's the cyclical nature of college sports, so I don't think anybody should be all that concerned about it. I think Greg Gard has this team rowing in the right direction, and I think he's a pretty good March coach. But they ran up against the top-seeded 24-2 Baylor Bears, and they got beat 76-63. I mean, they played them tough in the second half. They played them tough to start the game as well, but they just had that 13-minute stretch at the end of the first half that kind of did them in for the entire game. But the way that Wisconsin started the season and the way that they ended the season, if there's anything that's going to stick in the craw of Badgers fans, it's probably going to be that, because they started out the season really, really well. But as the season wore on, they stopped making their shots. But they kept playing everybody tough. But they had a stretch down the last month or so of the season where they were playing ranked team after ranked team after ranked team, and they were losing all of those games. And you can't afford to lose all of those games. I mean, when you lose in the regular season and then on into the Big Ten tournament, you know, in the regular season, they lost five out of the last six. The only team that they were able to beat was Northwestern. Northwestern sucked this year. But they played Michigan tough and lost to Michigan. And they were number three at the time. They got blown out by Iowa at the Kohl Center. But then they lost by five to Illinois. Illinois, notwithstanding their loss to Loyola in the NCAAs, Illinois still had a great season. So did Purdue, and they lost to Purdue. And then they go to Iowa. My pick to win it all. Obviously, that didn't happen. But they lost at Iowa, but played Iowa tough. But they kept losing all of these games. And that's the one thing that was problematic for me for my fandom of the Badgers, is that they had an opportunity to get signature wins, to get those Q1 wins, and they weren't able to close the gates on any of them. And to me, that's the most damning thing about this season. It's not that they weren't able to play good basketball teams tough. They were, and they were in most of their games, but they were really only able to beat the patsies of the Big Ten. And there were a lot of patsies of the Big Ten. There's just 14 teams. So it was a league that had two number one seeds and two number two seeds. Hasn't necessarily worked out that well for the Big Ten in the NCAA tournament as well. But, you know, in this last game against Baylor, you had Demetri Trice with 12 points, Nate Reavers with 11 points, Micah Potter coming off the bench, Jonathan Davis coming off the bench, 10 points apiece, but they only go eight deep. But after the game was over, Badgers coach Greg Gard met the media.
All right. First of all, obviously, congrats to Scott and his team. Obviously, it's a terrific team. You know, I thought the first half we had some possessions get away from us that where they got a lead on us. And proud of our guys, how we battled back in the second half. Obviously, got to seven or six there once or twice. But obviously Baylor made some plays and some answered that with some key buckets at times or free throws. But just got done with our team in the locker room and really thanked them for everything they've done for us, not only this year, but you know, a group of seniors that are obviously going out the door, and really appreciate all they've given us and what they've done for our program. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Jim Polzine, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Jim Polzine, Wisconsin State Journal. Greg, you talked a lot about their defensive pressure being one of their strengths yesterday. Do you think that overwhelmed your guys? You think it took maybe a half to get used to that?
Well, obviously the numbers tell us we turn the ball over higher than normal. And to obviously a team like that, we've got to maximize possessions. So I thought we got a little sped up early, you know, tried to play a little too fast at times. Second half was a little bit better, but obviously 14 is double about what we've been averaging, and they do a good job of their, you know, they're athletic, they're strong. They can put a lot of pressure on every position, specifically when they go smaller. So that obviously would definitely played a factor in it.
Jeff Patricus, please go ahead.
Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Greg, how would you summarize what this team went through this year, and in terms of being able to battle with some top tier teams, but just not being able to break through?
Well, I look at this at a deeper, it's bigger than basketball, Jeff. What these guys in this group, I've been doing this a long time, and I've never been around a group that's had to endure more over the last 2+ years. You know, going back to Coach Moore and that whole tragedy that they still carry with them, obviously, you know, rallying and winning a piece of the conference championship last year, having no tournament, which was an emotional blow. You know, and this year then having to navigate through a season in the middle of a pandemic and have, you know, unprecedented discipline in terms of what they had to follow every day and the protocols. I mean, we're one of the few in the country that got through without any pauses or any issues. So it really is. I just finished with them. I thanked them for all they've done for this program, going beyond basketball and beyond even this year, because that group of seniors obviously have been through a lot, and they've had, you know, great jubilation and some extreme trials. And as I told them, that's life. You're going to have some things go your way, and they're going to have some things not go your way. But as long as you're doing the best you can and giving your best effort, that's all we can ask. And they definitely, every day, they gave us all they could. They're able to play in a tournament this year, get one win, obviously wanted more. But they, there was never a deficiency of effort and giving of themselves to our program.
Josh Schaefer, please go ahead.
Josh Schaefer, Badger 24/7. Greg, Baylor's been considered one of the best teams in the country all year long. I was curious just where you thought they stacked up against some of the teams you guys played in the Big Ten this year, and kind of what they posed as a matchup issue and how they stacked up as far as it goes as best teams in the.
Yeah, they're similar they're a little similar to Illinois, minus the big guy inside. I know Illinois got knocked off today, but the guard play, I think, is what really stands out. That trio is exceptional. I think two of them are all Americans. You can see why. But I even thought the difference today was Meyer. The plays he made off the bench when they needed baskets in the second half, he answered for them. But the guard play, I mean, when you have guard play that good, you obviously will be one of the better teams in the country. So from a backcourt standpoint, similar to some of the best teams that we see in our league. Front line's a little different than what we see, but those three guards are terrific.
Tom Oates, please go ahead.
Tom Oates, Wisconsin State Journal. Greg, just from a basketball sense, going back to Jeff's question, you were competitive in so many of these losses, but couldn't quite get it done and fell short of your goals. Why do you think, from a basketball sense, that happened?
I don't know if I have an exact one, if there's one answer to it, Tom. I think it's a multitude of reasons. If I start listing reasons, it just sounds like excuses, but we had to continue to be more consistent. You know, we had a run there in the first half where we allowed them to get some separation from us, where, we either didn't finish inside, we turned it over, they got loose in transition. And against the best teams, you can't have inconsistencies in some of those areas. So that's probably one of the reasons. Against the best of the best. And obviously we've played, more than our share of the elite teams this year. You have to be able to, our margin for error is slim as it is. And then when you get against, the top tier in the country, your margin for error becomes almost non-existent. So you have to, adhere to those, guidelines, principles, whatever you want to call them, and have more consistency from possession to possession.
Next, we'll go to George B. George, please go ahead.
Yeah, George Bilecki, NBC 15. Greg, late in the second half, it was a close game, but then it seemed kind of like you guys were pushed away from your offensive system, kind of playing hero ball. Did you see that yourself? And if so, what do you think caused that change in the offensive attack?
The defensive pressure of Baylor. They went small and were switching everything. and made it really hard to be able to get to where we wanted to get to. So that was, I'll give credit to Baylor for getting us out of what we wanted to do.
Next, we'll go to Grant Flood. Grant, please go ahead.
Hey, Coach. I am Grant Flood from Insider Institute. My question to you is that, how did you keep your players motivated during halftime while trailing 42-29?
Well, we knew we had 20 more minutes, you know, make some adjustments on some things defensively, try to do a better job of taking care of the ball, you know, finish inside when we had those opportunities and minimize the miscues where Baylor was able to get some easy offense in the first half. So try to, you know, they knew we had another 20 minutes and there was going to be 30 some possessions, and let's make sure we, you know, try to attack that and do better in what we did the first half.
We have time for just a few more. Tom Oates, your line's open. Please go ahead.
I'm Greg. Tom Oates, Wisconsin State Journal. You haven't used your two bigs together much against small lineups. You went to it in the second half. Why'd you go to it, and what did you think it gave you?
I went to it because they went with their two bigs, with Vital and the other guy, Zero, in 23. So when both of them are non-shooters, we can play that a little bit better. When they came back with Meyer, it obviously made it a lot harder to do that. So I thought it gave us some good, you know, we got some production out of it, but, you know, Scott countered with going back and going small again. So we had to counter back to be able to chase Meyer around.
Take two more. Lance Beeser. Lance, your line's open. Go ahead.
Greg, just to follow up for a clarification on what Jeff asked you, are you operating on the presumption that none of your seniors are coming back? Some of them may come back. I mean, where does that sit right now?
I don't have any presumptions. I don't know. I'll give them some time to marinate from this and you know, let the emotional sting of all this, of the finality of a season, dissipate a little bit, and then I'll get a chance to talk to him. But right now, I don't know. I'm not going to guess.
We'll take our last one from Darius Joshua. Please go ahead.
How you doing, Coach? Darius Joshua, CBS 58 Milwaukee. Kind of following up on an earlier question, you talked about the strange season, but I'm wondering what will you remember most about these last 2 weeks where you're in Indianapolis for an extended period of time, obviously due to the new protocols, and obviously you're leaving a little bit earlier than you would like to.
Well, obviously a credit goes to our medical people and most specifically our players for getting us to this point where we could, you know, participate in postseason play. And I don't think anybody in the outside realizes what these guys have had to follow since September, really, to try to stay on a path to stay safe, obviously first and foremost, but also put yourself in a position to be able to play games. So, I think we were accustomed to this routine. Maybe not quite the lockdown or the quarantining or the, you know, really staying on a floor of a hotel and not leaving a hotel, except when it was scheduled. That was an adjustment, but I think the everyday protocols, the discipline that they showed during the year helped them be able to handle what was required over the last, you know, week, 2 weeks as we've been here in Indianapolis.
Badgers coach Greg Gard, after his team got bounced in the second round of the NCAA tournament by Baylor 76-63. As I mentioned, his leading scorer was Demetric Trice, probably playing in his final game in a Wisconsin uniform. But then again, he first matriculated to Wisconsin shortly after they made their Final Four run. His first season was 2016-2017. So he's already played five seasons. He could play another year. I don't think that he's going to. But nevertheless, I mean, he's 25 years old, has carved out his niche in Wisconsin Badgers history. Here's the senior from Huber Heights, Ohio.
Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Demetric, you talked about how this matchup between the guards, your guards and their guards, you and Brad did not shoot it well. Their guards made some plays. How good were they defensively, and how tough was it to get open looks or looks that you're accustomed to hitting?
Yeah, I mean, I think we got quite a few good looks that we normally knock down, but they did a great job of pressuring us, getting us out of our comfort zone at times, and It just came down to making some plays, and they hit a couple shots that got them the lead back up to maybe double digits or whatnot. But at the end of the day, we just got to be able to make some plays happen and knock down some shots. And that's really what it came down to.
Jim Polzine, please go ahead.
Dimitri, with all you guys being seniors, obviously a tough, what was the locker room like afterward? Can you kind of describe? I'm sure it was a very emotional setting.
Yeah, definitely. With the older group and a lot of guys leaving as seniors, it was definitely emotional. There was a lot of tears being shed, but we know that this group is going to stick together after this. There's still a lot of basketball to be played between each of us. So we're going to hold our heads high. A lot of people doubted us throughout the whole entire season. So we're just going to come out of here and hold our heads high and get ready for the next step in life.
Josh Schaefer, please go ahead.
Yeah, Dimitri, with the season as a whole, Josh Schaefer, Badger 24/7. Dimitri, with the season as a whole, how would you sort of evaluate what happened on the court when it came to playing these better teams and kind of never getting over the hump? What sticks out to you when you think about these games?
Honestly, it's hard to tell. At times it was turnovers. At times it was not making shots. So it just varies depending on who you were playing. Tonight it was a little bit of both. Credit to Baylor. Obviously, they're a really great team. And every time that we made a mistake, they capitalized on it. So it's hard. It's a tough way to go out as a senior, but the journey's not over still.
Tom Oates, please go ahead.
Tom Oates, Wisconsin State Journal. Dimitri, do you think this team improved this season over the way you played, especially in that last stretch late last season? Do you think you improved, this team improved?
I honestly do, especially off the court. I mean, when you take it into account everything that we've been through, and then obviously playing after a pandemic and being in a pandemic, it's kind of tough. And a lot of factors factor in on the season, and a lot of things that were perceived as normal last year weren't normal this year. So it was a whole new setting, whole new way. I know we came in one of the favorites in the NCAA, but there's a lot of factors outside of basketball that played a factor into the whole entire season.
We'll follow from Jeff Patricus. Jeff, go ahead.
Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Dimitri, we do know that some of the guys, the young guys, will be back next year. Of that group, you know, and maybe some of the young people who will be coming in the program, what do they have to do to next year to whatever it is, compete for a championship, get in the NCAA tournament? Who has to step forward?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the guys that are here now, Johnny, T-Wall, Steven, and a couple of other freshmen obviously got a little taste of it. So those guys are going to be the leaders of the team next year, and the guys that got a lot of the minutes that played this year are going to have to step up in a major way next year with us losing a lot of seniors. So obviously there's going to be good recruits coming in and a lot of hype around them. So all these older guys they're younger guys right now, but they're going to be considered older guys next year, are going to have to step up in a major way on the offseason.
Jim Polzine, please go ahead.
Jim Polzine, Wisconsin State Journal. Dimitri, Greg kind of subbed you guys out one by one late in the game when it was basically over. What was going through your mind then, knowing that was it for you personally after a 5-year career?
Honestly, it didn't hit me until I started shaking the hands of the coaches and the players and whatnot. But it is just tough. It's tough to go out like that as a senior, and time really flies by. I know I've been here for a while, and a lot of guys are probably tired of seeing my face, but it really felt like it was a blur. So I was excited to be here. I'm still excited to be part of the Badger family, and I'll always be a Badger.
Darius Joshua, please go ahead.
How you doing, Dimitri? Darius Joshua, CBS 58 in Milwaukee. I wonder, what we remember most about these last 2 weeks, where you had the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis, and then you stayed here in a most unusual NCAA tournament. And obviously, I know you're leaving earlier than you would like to, but what will you remember about these 2 weeks?
Honestly, being in the hotel with the guys, we tried to make it as fun as possible. being out of Madison, Wisconsin, in that bubble and moving into this bubble. So it's been a bumpy ride the last couple of weeks, but I think our team and our managers and our coaches did a great job of making it feel at home and lightening the mood a little bit, whether that's playing games as a team or going outside and getting some fresh air. I think we used it to our advantage and made the most of it.
Badgers guard Demetri Trice after what is probably his final game as a Wisconsin Badger. Again, the NCAA has allowed for, believe it or not, a sixth season for these guys, but I don't know how many of them are going to take the NCAA up on that offer when something else could happen for them. I don't necessarily see Demetri Trice as an NBA player, but there are a million leagues that will pay players of his caliber a lot of money to go overseas and play, whether it's in Turkey, Australia. There's a British basketball league. There's a French basketball league. There are basketball leagues on every corner of the planet. And that's where you see a lot of former Wisconsin Badgers and Marquette Golden Eagles really go overseas and earn a good living for a long time. That's where I suspect Demetri Trice might be headed. But if this is the end of the road for him in a Wisconsin Badgers uniform, at least they did get to the second round of the Big Dance. He scored a team-high 12 points on 5 of 17 shooting, so a little bit shaky of a night for him from the field. But I don't know if the Badgers are going to be able to get back to the Big Dance next year with all of the young players that Greg Gard is going to have to coach up during the offseason, and then nothing like trial by fire when the season begins and just seeing where they're at. But I do believe that this Badgers program is headed in the right direction, and I know that there were some calls to fire Greg Gard during the season, which I thought were absolutely ridiculous. This is a coach that has won. He has won in March, and some of the shots at the end of the season just didn't fall for him. All right, that'll about do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Please feel free to hit us up on our socials. As always, Doug Russell Pod, both on Twitter and Instagram. You can email the show, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. You can find us on YouTube. And for all of that in one very convenient location, as well as all of our shows, this is, I think, show 76? 76? Show 76. All right, there you go. For all 76 of our shows that you can download for free, you can go to www.DougRussellPod.com. Again, www.DougRussellPod.com. We'll see you next time right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.